You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Moving on, let's talk about VPNs, because SuperVPN, GeckoVPN, and ChatVPN are all on the chopping block this week. On May 7th of this year, a database containing the personal details and login credentials of 21 million users was leaked in a Telegram group. Now, what's noteworthy is that this dump basically also exposed the data of these VPN users. And so there you go. It was 10 gigabytes of data that was dumped. We're talking full name, username, country name, billing details, email addresses, randomly generated password strings, and premium status and validity periods of the accounts. Now, a further probe indicated that the leaked passwords were random, hashed, or salted, which basically means they're more difficult to crack. So that is a good thing in a data breach. But the majority of the emails, basically 99.5%, were Gmail accounts, though the researchers that were looking through this believe that was only a subset of the full data dump. But if you use SuperVPN, GeckoVPN, or ChatVPN, you definitely want to switch to something better. I actually recommend Viper VPN, V-Y-P-R VPN. They seem to be very solid as a personal VPN. Moving on, let's talk about Greece's National Transparency Authority, or NTA. They were forced this past Friday to remove a report on migrant pushbacks in the Aegean Sea as it was improperly redacted. And that's obviously rather embarrassing for the National Transparency Authority in Greece. Now, the authority removed the report, which basically it had posted online about a week ago or so, as it failed to properly hide the names and personal details of those who were interviewed during the investigation. And Greece has recently faced a bit of an immigrant crisis, coming off the heels of Syria and all of that. And so we see a lot of right-wing anti-immigrant sentiment basically boiling up in Europe and also here in the United States. So heads up to you if you are migrating or have migrated to Greece. Your information may have been dumped. Moving on, let's talk about the USDEA, or Drug Enforcement Administration. They say they're investigating reports that attackers gain unauthorized access to an agency portal that taps into 16 different federal law enforcement databases. On May 8th, Krebs on Security, the publication, received a tip that attackers obtained a username and password for an unauthorized user of esp.usdoj.gov, which is the Law Enforcement Inquiry and Alerts System managed by the DEA. Krebs on Security then shared that information about this allegedly hijacked account with the DEA, the FBI, and the Department of Justice, which obviously is the umbrella that houses both of those agencies. The DEA declined to comment on this, and here we are. So heads up, we may see a cybersecurity breach or disclosure coming from the law enforcement wing of the United States. Moving on, let's talk about a company called Horizon Actuarial. I don't know much about it, but it is a ransomware hit, and apparently more than 1 million people in the United States were affected by this. So if you use Horizon Actuarial, good luck. I will let you know if I find anything else here on the air. Moving on, once again, let's talk about the Oklahoma City Indian Clinic, or OKCIC. They had a ransomware attack, and they informed 38,239 patients that their protected health information was accessed during an incident. Now, on March 10th, the provider reported that, quote, technical issues have left the care team without access to certain computer systems. The attack led OKCIC to shut down its automatic refill line and mail order service of its pharmacy department. All patients were told to call the pharmacy for needed refills, which would require the individual to provide the needed prescription information to do so, drug dosage, chart number, provider name, and directions with a government-provided ID. This issue apparently has been going on for more than 2 months at that clinic. So basically, what they're saying is, I hope you kept your bottle and all the notes for your prescription, because we don't have them, and if you want it refilled, you're literally going to have to read us what you need off of that. Wow. So good luck, Oklahoma City Indian Clinic, OKCIC. I hope you get back on your feet, but wow, that is not a good time. And finally, and we have a few different finalies for you this week, I want to start actually with Lincoln College, Illinois, and this is actually rather depressing. It really bummed me out. I've been following this one for quite some time, and I was hoping that they'd get through it, but here we are. Now, Lincoln College, if you didn't know, It's a predominantly black college in Illinois, and it's going to basically, it closed actually last week as I'm sitting here talking to you after 157 years of operation, saying that it could not survive the financial challenges of both the coronavirus pandemic, but also a ransomware attack last year that basically put the final nails in the coffin. And to quote David Gerlach, the college's apparently last president, the loss of history, careers, and a community of students and alumni is immense. And basically, they attempted, basically media attempted to reach Mr. Gerlach further, and he declined to comment further on that. So there you go. Now, if you didn't know, this college was actually founded in 1865 and named for Abraham Lincoln. The college has survived the 1918 influenza pandemic, multiple recessions, two world wars, Vietnam, and on and on and on. And here we are. The pandemic led to a drop in enrollment and forced the college to make costly investments in new technology, according to the statement, meaning everybody was working remote. They're trying to keep their people. And so they needed to up their infrastructure vastly to make sure that they could still maintain connections to their students as their students were learning remote. But then in December of 2021, a ransomware attack basically walled off the school's access to its data and halted recruitment, retention, and fundraising. And there you go. Now, Lincoln College has not said how much it eventually paid to regain access to its data, though Mr. Gerlach told the Chicago Tribune that it paid a ransom of less than $100,000. The ransomware attack originated in Iran, according to the Chicago Tribune as well. Now, when the college's access to its data was restored in March, projections showed, quote, significant enrollment shortfalls that would require, quote, transformational donation or partnership to sustain Lincoln College beyond the current semester. And that's basically from that statement. They needed $50 million to stay open. That money did not materialize. And now this college, after 157 years, couldn't survive. And obviously the pandemic did a lot of damage to a lot of these different types of institutions. But again, the ransomware attack finished them off. And that is just depressing. These things have real life consequences, whether they're for small business or education or, you know, think about this. You might have proudly gone to Lincoln College. Maybe you were the first in your family to have a degree, and now that school is no more because some jerks in Iran decided to rip it off. And that is just absolutely depressing. But we are not done. We have some more finalies for you because I want to give you an update on the Pegasus vulnerability. And this is actually super interesting, although a little bit terrifying. So here's what's going on. The Citizen Lab in Toronto, Canada, basically discovered recently that the phones of dozens of pro-independence supporters in Spain's Catalonia region were infected with the Pegasus spyware. Now, according to Gabriel Rufián, a leading member of the Catalan pro-independence party, Spain's top intelligence official, Paz Esteban, admitted during a closed-door meeting that Spain's National Intelligence Center, or CNI, had hacked into the cell phones of quote-unquote some of the targeted politicians. That's according to the publication Security Week. However, Mr. Esteban says that the CNI had required judicial authorization for the surveillance. Mr. Rufián stated, quote, they, the CNI, admit to the spying, but say it was carried out against far fewer people than those cited by Citizen Lab. Now, when the surveillance first came to light, the Catalan separatists suggested that CNI was likely behind the hacking. Spanish officials insisted that the CNI was not authorized to tap phones without judicial authorization, but admitted that secrecy laws prevent the agency from confirming whether or not it actually was using the Pegasus vulnerability. Now, although CNI and Spain's ombudsman have said they will investigate the hacking, Esteban Beltran, Amnesty International Spain director, says, quote, this committee, characterized for its secrecy and obscurantism, cannot be considered the appropriate venue to investigate the alleged violence of human rights. Now, further complicating matters, earlier this week, the Spanish government found that the cell phones of both Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez and Defense Minister Margarita Robles were also infected with Pegasus last year. The revelations have basically the Spanish people questioning how widespread the spying is in their government and also who may be behind this. Citizen Lab senior researcher Jason Scott Railton stated, quote, being a victim does not preclude you from being a perpetrator when it comes to Pegasus, meaning if the upper echelon of the Spanish government said, yeah, let's go ahead and infect, you know, phones with the Pegasus virus. This is a zero-click virus, by the way, that came from an organization called the NSO Group out of Israel, and it was caught spying on world leaders, Nobel laureates, all this kind of stuff, and we are still seeing essentially these things come to light, and the Catalonian, Catalanian, movement for independence obviously was a very, very difficult thing internally for Spain. So it would make sense that their government would want to surveil the leaders with, that they consider possibly antithetical to the survival of their country. But to have, you know, the prime minister and the defense minister also caught up in Pegasus being surveilled as well is a really interesting thing. So we'll see where this goes. I'll bring it up more updates to you. But Pegasus, still around, even after all this time, one of the worst infections ever on an Apple iPhone. Moving on, or any phone for that matter. Moving on, another finally, and this is our finally, we're going to talk about Cameron County, Texas. And this one, quite frankly, is deeply, deeply concerning. Now, an investigation is underway after the Cameron County Elections Department said that the personal information of staff and poll workers was breached in January. Now, according to a statement from the department, names, social security, and driver's license numbers were all accessed through EasyVote, which is a company that provides poll worker management software. This data was made available on the internet. EasyVote is in contact with law enforcement regarding this breach. And in this politically charged climate, where we are seeing a portion of the population leveling literally death threats on people that are on school boards, election boards, all this kind of stuff, this is actually really scary. People could be targeted, especially if they are of the quote unquote wrong political affiliation. I mean, anecdotally, even here in my own school district where I live, our school board members basically were getting death threats over masking. I mean, these are things that are a huge, huge problem. And we have basically this group, this small group of people. And again, I'm not getting political here. I hate getting political, but they have zero tolerance and they are motivated. And that is a very terrifying thing. And so if you're a poll worker, understand that your data needs to be as safe and as secure as it is. You are doing essentially a sacred duty to democracy, which is ensuring a fair and honest election. And even if the election doesn't turn out the way you want, understand just how good the security tends to be on these things. Vulnerability is not the same as having an actual data breach. And this has been adjudicated over and over and over now for years, literally years. And we are still not seeing evidence to the contrary of that. So there you go. Again, I don't want hate mail over this, but it's an important one to look at, because if poll workers' information gets data breached, the last thing I think anybody really wants is them getting targeted, you know, for anything malicious when they're just trying to do their job. You know, my father was an election judge for decades. It was one of the things he was very proud to do as an American, you know, just fair and honest. And a lot of times his candidate didn't win, and a good chunk of the time his candidate did. But at the end of the day, he helped to make sure that the election was fair, and that's what we should all have. You win some, you lose some, you pick up, you try again. There you go. So those were your breaches of the week. Hopefully you weren't affected. Let's just say you were. I think we all were at some point, but there you go.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the deep dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a deep dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And this week's deep dive, unfortunately, but very importantly, has to be on Roe v. Wade. Obviously, this is a huge problem. I'm going to say this as I've said multiple times on air, cybersecurity is agnostic to politics, but we're not immune from it. I don't care where you fall on the belief scale. We have to talk about this, but not for the way that you're thinking. I have read very few of anything on the thoughts of data privacy and the consequences of overturning Roe v. Wade. And so I wrote an article myself. It should be out probably by the time you're hearing this, or around the time you're hearing this, on Smirconish.com, obviously of CNN and SiriusXM fame. But we need to talk about this, and it's so unbelievably important. So with that, let's just dive in, because by now it's common knowledge that a draft of the decision to overturn Roe v. Wade has leaked out. That's obviously caused a complete firestorm for activists on both sides of the political aisle. Obviously, it's been a very controversial issue. Now, after confirming that the leaked draft of this opinion was legitimate, Chief Justice John Roberts ordered the court's law enforcement wing to investigate to find the leaker. And obviously, everybody's pointing fingers at everybody. I'm not going to get into that. That in and of itself is a data breach, but the possibility of an even deeper privacy breach may be on the horizon if the court strikes down this 49-year-old law, which they seem basically on track to do. Now, with the debate heavily focused, for obvious reasons, on the right of women to have total agency over their bodies, there is another important concern that few are talking about. Now, consider for a moment, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, which seems incredibly likely given the recent leak and the current political makeup of the Supreme Court, which is 6-3 conservative, millions of women will also have to deal with data privacy concerns, especially in states that are focused on banning the practice of abortion or making it illegal. And we'll talk about that in a minute, because first I want to dive into the privacy side of this. About 21% of all women in the United States are using female-focused health apps that allow them to track things like ovulation, monthly cycles, and other deeply personal reproductive items. This burgeoning market is actually known as femtech, and it's expected to grow to be about roughly $50 billion US by 2025. So this is a booming industry. And we are all using these apps, or I should say 21% of women in the United States and growing are using these apps. Now, as most people in general have a basic understanding that they are being data mined on social media platforms like Facebook or TikTok, there is this perception, thanks to marketing efforts, that health apps are safe, secure, and private. And sadly, they are anything but. Now, outside of the Roe v. Wade issue, these apps already present a multifaceted problem for their female users. And to begin, these apps basically historically have not fallen under the umbrella of HIPAA. That's the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. That's the U.S. law that ensures that your personal health data cannot be used or given to third parties without your express consent. So, for example, if a woman is pregnant, her doctor cannot pass along this information to, say, a marketing firm that specializes in advertising pregnancy items. Right. So in other words, if you're talking with your doctor and you are relaying to him or her deeply personal things about your medical condition, if they need to give this to a third party, you have to basically sign a consent to allow them to do that. And that's the one thing that is missing from this entire equation. Now, fertility and women's health apps do not fall under HIPAA compliance, and they've actually been known to data mine their users, typically without their knowledge, and studies show that virtually nobody reads the end user license agreement because they're convoluted and vague, and so nobody really knows what's going on. And above and beyond just what's in there, we're being data mined in ways that I've talked about quite a bit, but most people don't realize. Now, further complicating this situation is that one of the largest women's health and reproductive apps, known as Flow, misled its users about their data mining policies and, quote, took no action to limit what these companies could do with user information. Now, that quote comes from a 2021 Federal Trade Commission complaint filed against Flow. Flow may be one of the most egregious data miners when it comes to this specific type of app, femtech, women's health apps, but there is no doubt that they are not alone in this practice. Everybody's data mining everybody. This is the backdrop that women face in states whose legislatures support total or near total abortion bans. Now, consider the case of basically abortion under Texas law. Once Roe v. Wade is overturned, a 2021 quote-unquote trigger law will be revived that basically states that both women, the women that are having the abortion as well as the doctor that is performing the procedure could face criminal convictions and prison sentences. This also can apply to those that aid and abet. This is why Uber came out and Lyft came out and said, you know, if a Uber driver is caught, or prosecuted under Texas law for, aiding and abetting a pregnant woman driving to an abortion clinic, then essentially Uber's going to cover their legal fees. Now, outside of Texas, multiple states also have trigger laws that would ban or severely restrict abortion statewide. So Arkansas, Idaho, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, and Wyoming will all enforce their own trigger laws, which could be tantamount to a slew of legal challenges basically all over the country. These states are all over the map. Now, imagine a woman in Texas using an app like Flow to track the intimate details of her ovulation cycle, and then she gets pregnant. She makes the decision to have an abortion, understanding the legal repercussions of her state, which is, as I mentioned, Texas. So she stops using the Flow app. She travels to a state where the procedure is legal and terminates her pregnancy. Upon her return to Texas, let's say there is a suspicion that she left the state for an abortion and the authorities are notified of this, given that Texas recently deputized their entire state to turn in women who have abortion for cash. That really, that scenario really isn't far-fetched. And so think about this. Texas says if you are, you know, if you find a woman has had an abortion, we will basically give you $10,000. You know, if it's successfully proven, you are entitled to $10,000, incentivizing the entire citizenship of Texas to try and find women that have had abortions. They basically deputized everybody in the state. Now, the question then is, could the authorities then attempt to subpoena the third-party companies that have been collecting Flow data, you know, from the Flow app that all of these women have been inputting? Well, Flow was caught sharing basically these intimate details of women's health data to two of the largest data miners in history, Google and Facebook, both of which have obviously had their own serious privacy violation charges leveled against them over the years. So you tell me. They could also, meaning the state of Texas, could also subpoena Flow directly, which is why privacy advocates have been saying that the stopping of the use of femtech apps is the safest bet in anti-abortion states to help maintain personal privacy. Now, aside from the data mining concerns of these apps, the other issue is simply making a phone call as a pregnant woman, or even simply owning a cell phone for that matter. Law enforcement can issue what is known as a geofence warrant. That means that all cell phones within a specific geographical location are given to law enforcement. So imagine being pregnant and traveling to a state to visit a relative that lives a block away from a Planned Parenthood, and your mobile phone location is now collected by Google or your cellular provider and turned over to law enforcement along with every other cell phone in the vicinity. Or imagine making a call to a Planned Parenthood just over the border of your state for non-abortion related health services, which according to Planned Parenthood is the majority of the services they offer. Something like 3% of their services usually entail abortion. They do a lot of other things. So if a natural miscarry occurs, meaning the woman naturally miscarries the child, but a neighbor or family member suspects an abortion occurred, now these items can be used against the woman. So you're going and you're visiting that relative that's down the block from a Planned Parenthood. You have a natural miscarry. Somebody suspects an abortion in one of these states. They basically get all of your cell phone information and they find, oh, well, you were next door to a Planned Parenthood. That could be evidence against you. So obviously these are huge, huge things. Now, in that vein, here is how you can maintain better privacy, just in general, but specifically for women living in a state with abortion restrictions that may now consider you a criminal if you have an abortion. And again, I am not getting political here. I am talking about the data privacy side of this, as well as how to defend yourself for data privacy. Take that for what it's worth. But these are the things that if I were going to be as private as I could in a state with abortion restrictions, this is what I would do. First, do not use apps that track anything reproductive or health related. These can be data mined and subpoenaed by law enforcement, as I just mentioned. It is simply best not to use these apps at all. Just don't use them. Therefore, you know, there you go. Now, if you have been using an app, you can request the removal of your data from the platform. So the United States, I've talked about this here on the air, the United States is lagging behind in data privacy laws. So you may actually have to lie and claim to be either a citizen of the European Union or the state of California. Now, I understand that's not the most ethical stance to lie about your citizenship, but those two entities, the EU and California, have laws that require these platforms to delete your information basically, and upon request, and they're also supposed to send you a verification in a timely manner that they did it. In other words, you basically say, well, I'm a resident of California or I'm a citizen of California, and therefore by law, they have to essentially agree and remove the data. Same by claiming yourself to be an EU citizen. And so if I wanted to remove all of my information from a health app or a cloud platform or a Facebook or whatever it is, I would definitely say I'm a Californian or I'm a member of the EU and or a citizen of the EU. That is super, super important. So make sure that you're going there and you're requesting the erasure of your data, which they should honor and also notify you that has been done. Also, you can use a personal VPN or our virtual private network. This is an app that can go on your mobile phone and your computer. This will allow you to route your internet connection through a friendly state or even a foreign country. So in this manner, your internet service provider will not only be able to, the only thing your service provider will be able to see is the VPN traffic, and they're not going to know where you're going on the internet, and so it's harder to obtain evidence against you. Imagine building in a case, and they subpoena your records from your internet service provider, because you can clear your own search history, and the internet service provider says, oh yes, well, you know, she's been looking at Planned Parenthood and, you know, going to various Google search results that all have something to do with abortion, but now if it's a VPN, the internet service provider, you know, take your pick, cellular or actual regular ISP in your house, doesn't see that kind of information, doesn't see that traffic. Also, you can use a privacy-focused search engine like StartPage. This StartPage will actually return Google results, but totally strip them of tracking, and they basically are anonymous. And if you combine this with a more privacy-centric web browser like Brave, which is based off of Chrome but stripped out all the Google tracking, that will help ensure your anonymity. So if you want Google results without Google basically knowing that you're in their filter bubble, what you're doing, how they can subpoena it, you can use StartPage. They're based out of the Netherlands, super private. On top of that, having essentially a browser that allows essentially you not to be tracked by the Googles of the world will help as well. I use Brave every single day. That is my go-to browser of choice. On top of this, it's so important because here's another point. Do not share personal health details on social media platforms or their messenger services. These are data mined heavily and can be subpoenaed in court. I understand that there's a good chunk of people that essentially use social media or Facebook as their own personal therapy group. I understand that logic, but please understand, it's not just you and your friends that can see this. It's you, your friends, Mark Zuckerberg, and 100,000 of his employees, and they sell this information constantly to everybody, which means they're going to honor requests from law enforcement that will now see you basically telling your entire social media circle, you know, I had an abortion and I need help.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A ESP. Again, that's Nick A ESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.